So, Mr. Chairman, I think you're calling to order the regular board meeting for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, the regular board meeting for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and the regular board meeting for Austin Affordable PFC, Inc.
That is correct.
To your direction, I'll call the roll. Vice Chair Bailey.
Here.
Commissioner Duncan Hall.
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo. Commissioner Carrington. Commissioner Carrington, give me a thumbs up, if you would. Great. And Chairman Ritchie.
Present.
We're still waiting for Commissioner Apostolo, who we know will be joining us in just a few minutes, but the board meeting is now officially started for all three. Again, Housing Authority of the City of Austin, Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and Austin Affordable PFC at 12:09 p.m. on Thursday, April 15th, 2021.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon. Okay.
We do have a quorum, so we are here. Citizens Communication, is there anyone from the general public who would like to address the Board of Commissioners for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin?
Yes.
Chairman Ritchie, we've lost your picture.
Okay. I know. I'm doing it intentionally. Right. I'm in my office, and I've got a couple of things going on, so I'm having to multitask.
Okay.
Is there any member of the public who would wish to speak? I note that Ms. Alshire, I know you're on the line. I didn't know if you wanted to speak or if there's any other member of the public who would like to speak. Now would be the time to do so.
I'm just listening, Mr. Gupper.
Great. Glad you're here. Okay, last call for any public comment, any citizens' communication. Hearing none, Mr. Chairman, I think. Sorry?
That said, here and now, we will move to the action items.
Mr. Chairman, the first item on the HACA agenda is the consent item. It's asking for approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on March 25th, 2021. Staff would recommend a motion to approve the minutes.
All right. So everyone's had a copy of the minutes, had opportunity to look over them. Are there any changes, corrections that need to be made to the minutes? If not, the chair will intend a motion to approve the board minutes from the March 25th, 2021 board meeting.
I move approval.
Motion by Commissioner Duncan Hall, seconded by Commissioner Carrington. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Next, we'll move to the action items.
Item number two, Mr. Chairman, is a quick update on HACA's actions related to the COVID-19 response and our resident and client support center. I would just give a quick update in the general context. We are working aggressively to get staff and residents immunized. Pilar will talk in just a moment about the immunization clinics that we've had at the properties, along with some other work that we're doing at the properties with residents. But as of right now, we have more than 100 members of our staff that have been completely vaccinated, and we're on our way to achieve our goal, we believe, of being able to open up at least at the 25% level by June 1st. So we're targeting that to get more people into the building to be able to do some of the important work and some of the team work that's so vital to the tasks we take on here at the Housing Authority. We're pleased that the vaccination rollout continues to go well for HACA and for our staff and for our residents. Pilar, let me turn it over to you to give a very quick overview. I know that today's board meeting is going to be a little tight for some folks, so we want to try to keep staff presentations very, very short. So, Pilar, go ahead.
Yeah, so Mike's covered the vaccines, and we've done that at our elderly sites for two doses now, and we're beginning our second dose at some family sites. The Boys and Girls Club is operating at Meadowbrook, Chalmers South, and BTW. and CIS continues to provide some limited services, and they're actually doing some porch site visits now. The Bringing Health Home has continued to provide COVID testing at several of our sites, and they go many times to the several to the same properties to keep testing. Through the rent program that we're administering for the City of Austin, we've received over 6,800 applications, which is great. It's much more than we had about this time last year. We've selected 2,000 to process, and we've approved over 300 renters to be assisted. So we have approved $1.8 million already, and the average per family is about 5 months and about $5,600 per family. Was that too short?
No, that's great. So we're really pleased with the progress that we're making in the rent program. We're pleased with the connectivity we have with our residents to help give them the vaccines. And you know, we're so pleased that Austin Public Health is bringing vaccination clinics to our sites. And we've literally had hundreds upon hundreds of residents and staff getting vaccinated. So it's encouraging, and we can see the beginning, hopefully, of the end, but obviously a long way to go, and we'll continue to work closely in community to make sure that our residents are supported. And a big part of that will be the summer programming that we do, again, through Boys and Girls Clubs and communities and schools. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, we'll go on to item number 3, unless there's any questions.
Proceed to item number 3.
Item number 3 is a presentation, discussion, and hopefully your approval of resolution number 2703, adopting the revised Housing Choice Voucher Program payment standards. And Lisa Garcia will share details about this item. It's an item that you see each year and largely is reflective of the increased rents that we see here in the City of Austin. Lisa?
Sure. Good afternoon, board, staff, and guests. Before you have resolution number 2703 requesting to revise the Housing Choice Voucher payment standards to 105% of the published fair market rents. You last reviewed these in October of 2020, and you approved to increase them to 100% of the published FMRs. Since then, what we've seen is we've got the 2021 HUD funding for the Housing Choice Voucher program, and we have got, thankfully, plenty of money this year. And I do a 2-year projection tool analysis, and at the end of 2021, we will have sufficient funds available to be able to increase the payment standards to 105%. We're also able to issue about 100 vouchers a month starting in May of this year through the end of the year. And we want to make sure that families are successful in being able to locate quality homes throughout the City of Austin. I did also complete a payment tool analysis that HUD provides, that I did complete that. I did meet with HUD officials too to take a look at it to see what the impacts would be. The payment standard would result in about a $2 per unit cost increase, but at the end of 2021, we would still have sufficient funds and reserve balance to be able to make this increase. Payment or FMRs will come out in October, and at that time we'll take a look at where we're at and we can make a decision if we want to stay where we are here, if we want to make any further adjustments. I open it up to any questions you might have.
Rent just keeps going up, unfortunately, although it went up a little less this year than it has in previous years. With the ask today questions, we would ask for a motion to approve resolution 2703.
I move approval of 2703.
Is there a second? There's a motion made and a second to approve resolution number 2703. Are there any questions? Is there anyone from the general public who would like to make a comment before we vote? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we'll go to item number 4. which is a to presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution number 2704, approving the submittal of the Section 8 management or the CMAP certification to HUD.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are very pleased that once again, Lisa and the amazing team in rental assistance have earned the highest level of success in their management of the Section 8 program, the Housing Choice Voucher program. As you all know, Lisa has and her team have earned incredibly high scores throughout Lisa's long and very distinguished tenure with the agency, and this year is no exception. There are a couple of wrinkles regarding the deconcentration bonus that I thought maybe let Lisa share with you. But Lisa, congratulations on this. And again, just a testament to the skill that you and your staff have built in managing this program.
Thank you. Appreciate the kind words. And yes, happy to report that we completed all the reviews of the Section 8 program this year, and we'll be able to move forward with 104% score. And this year, with regards to the deconcentration bonus points, we were able to get those. And in doing that, Andrea Galloway helps with mapping where families with children live in the Austin area. And she uses the American Community Survey to do that. And using the most recent information available, what we saw was that we're starting to see the results of gentrification. So areas that used to be considered, higher poverty areas are now considered low poverty areas. So we're able to receive the bonus points here, because what we've seen is more than 2% of families that have moved in the last two fiscal years did move into low poverty census tracts. So I guess that's good and bad news. It means that, some of the areas, they are becoming lower poverty areas, but it's also a result of, gentrification in these areas of Southeast Austin, primarily is where we saw it. So any other questions that you might have?
Question, Lisa.
Yes.
The fact that we are now seeing more of our residents being able to use vouchers in our newly acquired properties, did this have any effect on the deconcentration factor?
Yes, in the fact that they are moving into some of those areas where we purchased properties in areas with low concentrations of poverty. Yes, we're seeing a greater number of families moving into the Austin affordable housing property. So, yes, that did have an effect as well.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chairman, if there's not any other questions, we would suggest a motion to approve Resolution 2704.
The chair will entertain a motion it's been a motion made. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
There's a motion and a second on approving resolution number 2704, which is the submission of the CMAP certification to HUD. Is there anyone from the general public who would like to make a comment before we act? Hearing none, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we'll go to item number 5, which is...
Mr. Chair, I have Commissioner Apostolo seconding that last motion. Who made the...
Yes.
Was it Commissioner Carrington or Duncan Hall who made the original motion?
I think Carrington.
Carrington.
I think I jumped in and
Carrington.
Did it a little early.
Great. So Carrington and Apostolo seconding. Thank you.
Correct.
Mr. Chair,
are you ready to move on to item number 5?
That's an update on Austin Affordable Housing Corporation's acquisition and development programs. I'll provide a very short fill-in at this point, and then we'll turn it over to Ron and Suzanne with Commissioner Carrington in her role as chair of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, assuming the chair. If you look, we're excited today to bring you two projects. One is an acquisition property down in South Austin, the IMT, which you'll hear about in just a couple of minutes on the Austin Affordable agenda. The second is utilizing 4% and bonds, 4% tax credits and bonds for the financing of Rosewood Courts East. And so you will hear about that project as well, again, on the Austin Affordable agendas. But I would note that just at this item, you know, as we talk about just sort of the portfolio in a general context for under item number five, I'm just so impressed by how well that portfolio is performing under Ron and Suzanne's leadership. As you look at the insert in your board book, where you can see the lease up rates and you can see you know, the success that we're having in housing more voucher holders. I hope you all feel very encouraged by the really remarkable work that Austin Affordable is doing. Ron, anything that you would highlight as a general statement before we turn it over to Commissioner Carrington and going through the AHC agenda?
I would just like to state that, and thank you, Mike. Coming forward, you're going to see some of the new development projects coming for you over the next few months that Suzanne's been working on quite diligently for quite some time. Starting in May, we'll see some public hearings first, so you can hear from comments from the public on those sites. And then we will move into June and July for final approvals on some of these deals after public comment has been given to you all. So I will say that the acquisition market is extremely competitive and extremely tight. While we've seen some slowdown in maybe a little bit of slowdown in some of the leasing, it is rapidly increasing day by day, and we're seeing that in our portfolio to where we are now in several of our sites, if not more than half of our sites, were 100% occupied and 100% pre-leased. It's very, very, very competitive. We only see this trend continuing to move forward with the people coming in for Tesla and for Apple and for the Motorola expansion, IBM, all these spinoff companies that are coming here are really having an effect on our portfolio across the region. So more to come on that, but you know, that's just basically a high level 30,000 foot view. But we'll be pretty busy on the new development side in the board meetings coming up in the near future with Suzanne's portfolio.
Lots of opportunities for us, and really appreciate the diligence and care. I know the board has also had an interest in, obviously, our expanded relationship with LDG development, and an analysis has been done of LDG. And so at the next board meeting or prior to it, we will probably be bringing together Chairwoman Carrington and the vice chair, who I think is Mr. Bailey, to talk about, or maybe it's Commissioner Duncan Hall, I may be mistaken. To talk a little bit about the capability review, which has been very, very positive and favorable. But I think we want to walk through that with you so that you all have a high degree of confidence in the assessment of that firm as we enter into ever deepening relationships with them and do more development work with them. Chairwoman Carrington, with your indulgence, we'll switch over to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda. We've already called the meeting to order, and the quorum has been certified, and I think we're ready to turn to if there's any citizen communication.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment on the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda item 2 and 3? Okay, hearing none. I need a motion to approve the consent item, which is the minutes of the meeting of March 25th, 2021.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Second. Any comments, discussion? If not, do I hear a motion that the minutes are approved?
I so move.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you.
Second.
And a vote? We've already voted, haven't we?
No.
Let's move to the first action item, which is presentation, discussion, and possible action on Resolution 182 of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation And this involves the participation in a housing tax credit application for Pathways at Rosewood Courts East. And that will be Suzanne that will be doing this presentation.
Actually, Commissioner Carrington, I'm gonna take that presentation on if you don't mind. I didn't have a chance to give you the
That's fine with me, Mr. Kowal.
Thank you, Commissioner Carrington and commissioners and Mr. Gerber, staff. Good afternoon. Resolution 182 shouldn't be of anything, as far as the actual resolution goes, shouldn't be anything different that you haven't seen some umpteen million times before. Usually we're talking to you about this is the first step in putting our toe in the water to do a tax credit application. You will also see on the PFC, Austin Affordable PFC agenda, we will be doing the same thing to put in, our application in for bond inducement for Rosewood. The difference on this is it's Rosewood Courts, and as many of you know, our application for Rosewood Courts was submitted early as a 9% deal. It was going along swimmingly. Everything looked really good, and we were in money. And with those applications, there's some promises of third-party reports that need to be submitted to TDHCA in a timely fashion. And despite all our egging on and promises and guarantees that we'll have all these in, one of our third-party reports, the market study, was submitted late and therefore caused a possible termination of our 9% application. With that, there's some things we can talk about, but I'm going to just stick to the resolution at hand, and we'll defer to defer to Mike and staff to go through all that. So the application for tax credits again is just to get us on in line to the TDHCA requires us to get an inducement with a board resolution approval to submit an application for 4% credits and pair that up with bonds. And so what that is today is just for the development of Rosewood Courts. And as this, you know, this will be the first time you'll see this application, as we say many times. So this will be the initial inducement of the bonds and the initial resolution for us to proceed with the tax credit application for Rosewood Courts.
And Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, I would just note that, you know, there's many ways to finance a deal. And when we did Chalmers Courts, Chalmers Courts, you know, has two phases. You know, one that's almost we're starting to lease up Chalmers East, which is funded with 9% tax credits, but the property right across the street, that's, you know, the heart of that community right now where Commissioner Apostolo lives, Chalmers South, that's funded with bonds and 4% tax credits. So we use, you know, a variety of different approaches, and each approach really kind of serves as a plan B for the other. And there are other approaches to finance as well that we, you know, always want to be ready to deploy if we, you know, can't be successful in one avenue. We always want to make sure we have another. And so we don't believe we miss a beat with this approach at Rosewood. And so we're excited to recommend to you all to ask for your approval to submit a tax credit application to the Texas Department of Housing under Resolution 182. And we'll couple that with bonds in a few minutes. And we feel that it'll give us, you know, all the ability we need in order to successfully execute Rosewood Courts in expectations, meet the expectations of the residents and the community at large. And I wanted to just acknowledge Will and Audrey Martin, who are doing an awful lot of work in the financial modeling of this under Ron's leadership. And Ron's been just tremendous, along with Suzanne, to pull this together. And I want to thank Sylvia as well. A lot of work on Rosewood has continued, even as we have to sort of, you know, mix and match different financing structures. The work continues, and we're determined to meet our goal of starting work on Rosewood Courts in 2022, as we've committed to this board and to the community. So we would recommend approval of Resolution 182.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Are there any questions for either Ron or Mike related to Resolution 182, which is the tax credit application for Pathways at Rosewood Courts East? Any questions from the commissioners?
Yeah, just one. I do. I have one question. So with this inducement, do we also have to go back to the city council as well?
We will, and we've been in touch with officials at the city, and I think, you know, once again, we can expect unanimous support for the, you know, for this, or near unanimous support. There's been a change in the makeup of council, but we don't anticipate any issues, and we've been in touch with city staff as we've worked through different financing, because even under any scenario, we're going to be looking to do some major drainage improvements and other work that's going to require the city. The city's going to be a major financing partner in this as well. You know, they're major stakeholders too. So we're all working together to figure out the right approach and to keep all options open. And we're glad we're using this option. It couples up well with city funding. But yes, we'll be going back to council, although we're not sure exactly when.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Gerber, Mr. Kowal, or Will and Audrey are on the phone. Does anyone have any questions for Will and Audrey?
Let me just say this. It is good to meet Audrey virtually. I've heard her name bannered about by a number of folks over a very long period of time. And everything the people have said about you is very, very good, and people hold you in very high esteem. So I'm honored to finally get a chance to meet you.
It's very nice to meet you as well. Thank you for the kind words.
Let me brag on Audrey for a second, if I can, Mr. Chair. Audrey worked for Commissioner Carrington when she served as executive director of TDHCA. She worked with me when I served as executive director. You know, one of the most extraordinary housing professionals in the business, and has set up a very successful consulting business, but has worked and has been an incredibly important member of our team, and just feels this deeply, has been with us every step of the way. So I look forward, when it's safe, to doing in-person meetings, but Audrey is a really special person on our team. So I'm glad you highlight her, and it's also nice to see Will here as well. And our friends at Carlton have been just tremendous in working through some complexity on Rosewood. Rosewood's not been as straight of a development, straight path to redevelopment as Chalmers Courts might have been, or as Goodrich was. And so lots of challenges, and appreciate having the quality of professionals that we have on this team. And there's many others as well. So, but thanks for calling out Audrey, and I'm glad Will's on here as well.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Will, you have anything to say?
I'll second Mike's comments on Audrey. She's a vital part of our team and has done yeoman's work on it. I'm really glad that even though we're changing financing paths here, that we're still going to be able to put the same same development on the ground, same great improvements that we were planning to do as a 9%. Physically, this development is going to look just like it would have at a 9% on a 4%. So very thankful that even though we're changing strategies a little bit, the end product is still going to be the same and what the community and those residents deserve.
Thank you, Will. Pretty exciting for this to be moving forward. Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair, I would also just mention, since Will mentioned, when we're changing strategies, you don't see him very often, but when we were in the thick of some challenging discussions, I think it's also important to note that the head of the firm, the general partner of the firm, Mr. Gary, was right in the center of all of it. And I just think it's important for the board to know that he is far from a silent partner or an uninvolved partner. And, we really appreciate his leadership. And he's also someone who's been in the affordable housing business for, his entire professional life. And that's also helped us to navigate some of this complexity. So a deep bench. We have a deep bench.
Mike, I got a quick question.
Yes.
Chairman Carrington. I don't know, do these folks work for us, or do they have their own company and we have a contract with them?
The folks that you mean, Will and Audrey?
Uh-huh.
So we're in a partnership with Carlton, and I believe that partnership has hired Audrey to serve as our tax credit consultant. Did I say that correctly, Will?
Correct. Carlton Companies is the co-developer with the Housing Authority entity, and then through us, we hire the architects, engineers, and consultants such as Audrey.
But it's important, Mr. Bailey, for you to know also, we continue to own the Housing Authority through, you know, through Austin Affordable Housing Corporation continues to be the owner of the land and the property. So we continue to own the asset.
And then what exactly does the partnership do?
Partnership is responsible for the redevelopment of the site, and then we will manage it together for a period of time as these various tax credits and other finance tools play out over their intended time periods. So Carlton will actually serve as they are now at Carlton at Chalmers. They will serve actually as our property manager for a period of time at Rosewood Courts as well. So we're excited about that piece of it.
How long is the partnership? What's the duration?
Ron, do you know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so typically what happens is there in our MOU, and Will can chime in, is there's a we're on co-guarantees on the project. They are on the guarantees through construction completion, and then there's some deferred developer fee that will be carried over on this project, and that will simultaneously go with our co-guarantee. And once construction completion has been approved and everything's been signed off on, and these, for the most part, the developer fees have been paid off, then Carlton companies would then exit. I don't have the exact timeline. It's usually probably 3 to 5 years, depending on the quickness of the payment down of the developer fee on this one. But once they're relieved of their liability and their guarantees, then they would step out and we would step in. We would take full, complete control.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Sure. And, of course, we have the ability to move people out earlier if we choose or let them stay longer if we find that it's helpful. We do envision, because of the complexity of the finance structures that we're using at Chalmers and at Rosewood, we do envision Carlton being a long-term partner. Here, it's these properties have been a little different, as we shared with you all, a little different than just simply rebuilding an apartment complex. There's multiple phases and multiple sources of subsidy and lots of compliance requirements that we don't want to miss. And so Carlton's been a very important partner to us. So I'll give you by a basis of comparison, at Goodrich, which we developed with Atlantic Pacific Companies. That was really, in a lot of ways, we hired them and they built a building for us. And so we are in the process now of, moving, them out of that role. They've done a very fine job, but having them step out of that role of managing Goodrich, and we will reassume, full responsibility for all the operations and maintenance of that building.
And from a legal representation, I know Wilson serves as our general counsel. Some of this stuff's pretty esoteric. Does his firm step in and take care of the construction and the financing, or do we have other lawyers that do that?
So we have Coates Rose, which is represented by Bill Walker, who's on the day, and you've met, of course, Barry Palmer. So they really work to protect our interests throughout much of this process. Wilson does step in if we get into an issue that needs resolution, or if there's a dispute. Fortunately, we haven't had those with any of our partners, which I'm really glad. Which is also because we are really picky about who we work with, and your words of caution have meant a lot, and so we're pretty lawyered up, and we make sure that everyone's real clear on what the expectations are, going into the deal. I will say also that the partnership has an attorney working for it. Cynthia Bast also serves, and protects the interests of the partnership. And so as we have worked through some of this complexity in recent weeks, she's been brought to bear in this as well. So no shortage of people with JDs on the job.
Can't have too many JDs. Thank you.
Oh, you can.
Any more questions or comments from the commissioners? If not, then do I hear a motion to approve Resolution 182, which authorizes Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to execute all the documents necessary to apply for and participate in the housing tax credit application for the pathways at Rosewood Courts East. Do I have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 182.
Commissioner Apostolo, second.
Second.
Commissioner Ritchie, is there anyone from the public that would like to comment on this? If not, all of those in favor of approving Resolution 182, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. The resolution passes. Thank you very much. We are now going to move to item three, Austin, in the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda. And this is to approve Resolution 183. And, it is for AAHC to facilitate the acquisition of IMT South Park, which is the development. And it consists of multifamily housing. The second part of this is cause AAHC subsidiary Linked Liability Corporation to own the development. Item three of this, cause the owner to enter into acquisition and development financing. And item four, cause AAHC enter the owner to execute any and all documents that will be necessary to allow the transaction. So item number three then also has Ron's name on it, Mr. Kowal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff. I'm very pleased to ask your permission to approve Resolution 183, which is the purchase of a property called the IMT South Park. This property is a 570-unit property built in 2014. It was presented to us by the ownership off-market, so we were fortunate that we did not get into a bidding process with 5,200 other investment companies in Austin, Texas, trying to buy apartment complexes these days. So we were very fortunate on that. The property sits, you all are very familiar with South Park Meadows development off of on the frontage road of I-35 and Slaughter Lane. This is just to the west of South First. It actually has ingress and egress both on Slaughter Lane and on South First. It's just to the south of our recent purchase, James, at South First, which is just about a smidgen up from there. If we were able to move it, you can see the James, which is right there with the dot. So that's how close it is. And I'm happy to tell you that the James is 100% leased right now. It's also relatively close to our Asher property, which we purchased some time ago with CDT. The Asher's is on the east side of Slaughter Lane, and that property also, as large as it is 100% occupied and 100% pre-leased. So we're doing very well in that sub-market. It seems to be very, very strong. So we're real pleased with this. This is a partnership. This will be our fifth purchase with Belveron Corporation. They had a good relationship with the IMT owners and were able to pull us in. We're very happy, very pleased to be partners with them. This will, again, be a minimum of 50% of the units will serve residents below 80% AMI. Right now, on a very rough, quick audit of the units that are rented there, we're somewhere between 85 and 86% of the units seem to fall within that category. I will tell you that our due diligence will start on Monday. We have a 21-day due diligence, and we will do a very, very, very deep dive lease audit into the property starting Monday at 10 a.m. and to assess the true affordability of the property. What we're seeing, commissioners, is if we don't buy these assets, and we're not trying to buy everything, we've turned down a couple in the last weeks, too, just because of pricing. But what we're seeing in the markets right now is every single property that's being purchased outside of what the affordable community is trying to purchase is getting turned into $200 to $300 to $400 a month rental increases. Because the pricing is so high, in order to make up for it, they have to raise rents. And we're going to, over the next 12 to 15 months, many of these residents in these places that are considered somewhat affordable at the time are now turning into very, very high-end market rent deals in order to just to make it work. So we're fortunate to keep a few of these out of their hands and continue to grow the affordability needs here in Austin by purchasing some of these. As you can see, the property has 360 one-bedroom, one-baths, 184 two-bedroom, two-baths, and we have 26 three-bedroom, two-baths. While maybe it doesn't seem like that's a lot of three bedrooms, it's very rare to find properties with three bedrooms in them for many reasons. So we're excited about that. And again, these properties will all, this property will be 100% open to our voucher program. We're very excited to include that into our portfolio. We're looking at a Fannie Mae loan, probably somewhere in the 330s range right now. It's a $116 million purchase price. AAHC and its subsidiaries have zero liability and are on none of the carve-out guarantees that typically would be asked of us as the general partner. This is 100% assumed by our partners, Belveron. They're also putting up about 1.2 million in additional capital reserves set aside for future needs. And as they do on every single property while we're in COVID, 12 months of money will be set aside to make sure that mortgage debt service will be comfortably made. And so we'll have that in reserve as well. So it's a part of the criteria that we've been using on these purchases. Other than that, it's a fantastic location. It's very close to transportation. There's several bus routes there as well within walking distance of the property. And we're excited to get into due diligence. Our expected closing time will be somewhere in that's a very short time fuse. We have a 21-day feasibility period along with a 15 to 20-day close after that. And so we'll be closing this somewhere toward the end of May. Wanted to give you a chance to look at it, get your comments, thoughts. And again, we're super excited to add this one to our portfolio.
This is a major purchase for us. This is our largest purchase. As many of you know, some years ago, we purchased two properties side by side, the Bridge at Tech Ridge and the Bridge at Center Ridge. That was 647 units, but it was over two properties. Although they were, right back to back against one another, and they were managed by the same firm. But this is one property that we're managing, and it's a beautiful property. I had the chance to be down there over the weekend and took a drive through, and it's I don't know if you can appreciate it, but if you can see the park that's there to the south, there's lovely trails and just an awful lot of really great stuff nearby, right down Slaughter, just a little outside of, but pretty close to walking distance to, for those who are physically able to walk down to South Park Meadows. There's just an awful lot of stuff happening in that part of Austin. And the park is lovely. The trails are lovely. There's schools nearby. So we feel very excited about this property. I would also say that we, are also mindful of our own branding as well. So, IMT is another company and that brands under IMT. And so obviously that name will be going, but all of the properties that we've purchased with Belveron, Montecito, Broadstone, and the James, Arbors of Tallwood, all of those property names, including this one, but all five are going to adopt the common name that Austin Affordable has been using for our acquisition preservation properties of the Bridge at, we're not quite sure what it's going to be, the Bridge at South Park or the Bridge at, maybe the Bridge at Seawright or the Bridge on West Slaughter. We'll figure that part out. But we are going to try to put it under a common name and give it a sense of a common branding. So we're excited about that as well. But it's a lovely, lovely property. And where the circumstances different, one I wish we could take you to see.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And thank you for bringing up the park. I had the privilege to walk back there. And it just really is amazing. It's really beautiful. You can just go right out your back door of the apartment complex, and it's a massive, it's Mary Moore Park, and it's just a beautiful walking trail, and there's just a lot of neat things. It's very, very, very peaceful back there. and just if you see just to the east, it's a very heavily populated residential area there between South First and Slaughter to the east of our property. So it's got a very diverse clientele with all the need for the service community workers all up in South Park Meadows, along with we're finding a lot of people communicating south to San Marcos and San Antonio that are leasing to our properties here on the south of Slaughter Lane, which is kind of neat. And anyway, it's just a fantastic opportunity, and we're super excited for it. I will tell you it will not be a done deal until 21 days from Monday, should you approve this today. So we've got some due diligence to do and some work to do, and we'll be walking units and again doing a full lease audit. And I'll be happy to report back to you in May as to the progress we've made, should you approve this transaction for us today.
Commissioners, we would ask your approval of Resolution 183.
Question,
Tyra, both.
Yeah, I'm looking at the breakdown, the unit breakdown page at the end of the pictures for this item, and one thing that struck me as somewhat different is that with the 570 units, there are only 75 parking spaces, which is rather small given the size of the units. Can you clarify that for me?
I honestly, Commissioner, I can't. I don't know what the additional parking is there and why there's only 75 with 570. I don't know if that's a typo. If there's adequate parking on the facility when you drive through, and I never paid attention to that, so I don't know if that's a mistake, which it could be, but I will certainly get back to you on that. I've driven the thing 3 or 4 times, and it doesn't seem like there's any shortage of parking. So, and obviously you can't have 75 parking spots for 570 units. So I'm wondering it should be 750 instead of 75.
They go so far as to break it down to point one per unit.
Right. That has to be a mistake. That's a great catch, Commissioner Duncan Hall. But I will assure you, I've been out there, and it's there's more than adequate parking in the facility. So I will certainly make sure I know what the ratio is. But I didn't see any issues there.
Yeah, and I particularly was concerned seeing the number of either single units or the one bedroom units, which was what, about 300 and some.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. Those are the most popular demand down there. COVID is really shifted to a demand for people wanting to be by themselves. But that's not only the reason why it's so popular. You've got a lot of people that are just single. Yet this is very young, professional, diverse population. And again, we haven't dug deep in enough to tell you exactly what the demographic we're serving in the job categories that we're looking at, but from talking to staff on site there now, we feel that we have a lot of service sector people in that area that work up and down that I-35 South Slaughter corridor on both sides of the buildings, and there's a huge demand for those one bedrooms, and that's how projects were built back, you know, just only six, seven years ago. I mean, the larger units were meant to never lease because they never knew that people were buying houses. So now that's completely flipped. So the ability to get some 3 bedrooms for our families is a plus here. The 2 bedrooms are extremely large. I had the privilege to walk into one of the 1200 square foot 2 bedroom units, and I can't wait to show you the floor plan. They're absolutely fantastic. So, they're so big. I've never seen a 2-bedroom that large before. And then there's 184 of those. So we've got a pretty good mix, I feel. But again, the 1 bedrooms are what's the most in demand that we've been running into. So,
even the 1 bedrooms are large, aren't they?
They are. They have a 900 square foot 1-bedroom apartment. And it's, you know, usually you've been seeing some 2 bedrooms that are 850 square feet on some of these units, and that was what was also attractive to us is the size, and so we're not worried about a 2-bedroom unit with a baby with the family that has a child or something, that we have those big size square foot units. And I will say we're going to do a huge deep dive into the affordability here. Belvoron's very well known with us to actually, and you know, you've seen this before in other presentations, we've actually lowered rents on many unit floor plans to meet a deeper affordability. And I think you'll probably see that here. I just can't commit to it right now because we haven't started our due diligence yet. And once we get in, really dive into it, and I will say, doing four projects with Belvoron Corporations, the first thing that they bring up is how can we serve their 10% across the board, not just on the affordable 50% of the units, but on the whole project to serve below 60. And that requires us to drop rents, sometimes on the bigger units, sometimes as much as $300 a month and maybe more. So they're just fantastic to work with. And I think you'll see that here as well. And I apologize. We just, like I said, we haven't gotten into that deep dive, but I can assure you we're going to surpass by a lot the minimum requirement under the state law that we have to serve below 50% of the units below 80. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear.
That's
our goal. I have a question, Ron.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Mary. Does it have an elevator? Three floors.
It's three floors, so I don't think we have elevators. They're not
okay,
required.
Okay, it's got to be four floors, right?
Got to be four story. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got a couple of
Chuck?
Go ahead. If you had some, I can wait.
No. You've got the floor.
There are a couple of questions I have. How much more are we paying for this property than we paid for the next highest property?
So from the last purchase or from when we first started?
What's the most we've ever paid for a property before this one?
Probably very similar to this. The James was in the about $190,000 per unit. But then again, I don't have the breakdown by square foot. I can just tell you by a door price. Back in 2004, when several of you on the board approved our first purchases of Bentry and Sterling Village, we paid anywhere from $36,000 a door to about $45,000 a door. So we're seeing.
But they weren't as big as this project, correct?
That's correct, but it really didn't matter in terms of the per door units. Even the larger ones were selling for maybe the $50,000 door range. Sterling Village was 207 units, so it was fairly large at the time. And we paid, I think, about $41,000 a door for it. What we're seeing in the market is on average now the nicer Class B plus A minus units are selling somewhere in the $240,000 to $260,000 a door range. And therefore it requires, massive rent increases. And those are the projects that we're passing on. We just passed on one just this week. It's called the Enclave West, I believe. That was just way overpriced for our taste, that we just couldn't make it work with the affordability that we want to achieve. But yes, this is there's several calculations we use also, from the financial side, which is a cap rate, which basically gives you an assessment of where properties are serving based on a method or a model. This is kind of in the 4 to 4.5 cap rate, and it'd go a little bit higher with that when you.
What I'm concerned about opening the newspaper to the real estate section. Says housing authority buys a $116,000 luxury apartment.
$116 million.
No, I want it to be $116 million. That's a pretty big jump from what I'm used to, and I understand the square footage and how much per door and all that stuff. I'm just talking about impact. Somebody looks and says, Well, what's the housing? Where's Housing Authority getting all that money? $116 million for luxury apartments. Mike, is that something that y'all have thought about? And while I'm still thinking about the $116 million, I noticed that we're also binding ourselves to get a $94 million bridge loan. I mean, how big is too big? I guess that's what I'm asking.
But Mike, before you answer, I just want to make it clear, just for the record. I mean, we are, and I know it, I know we can still be on the front page of the Statesman, Commissioner Bailey, if something ever went wrong. But HACA, its affiliate AAHC, or the LP, the limited partner, or the general partnership agreement, partner that we're forming for this entity to purchase, has zero liability on the debt. It's a 100% on, these are non-recourse notes, and the recourse is to repossess the property, but, and has no liability whatsoever to AAHC or its affiliates. It's 100% falls on Belveron based on the agreement that we have.
I think y'all have done a good job. What I'm concerned about, not so much the real facts, I'm concerned about the perception.
Yeah, so the perception is always an issue, and I guess I go back to, you know, when we were buying Tech Ridge and Center Ridge. It was interesting. You know, we were concerned about that because it had a nice pool, as you recall. This property has a nice pool, but it doesn't have a pool as nice as the ones up at Tech Ridge and Center Ridge. But we were concerned about that perception piece as well. Why has the Housing Authority entered into a partnership through a subsidiary, admittedly, but why are they entering into a partnership to go and buy properties with, you know, with really nice pools? So we actually, we hunted down Mayor Adler. We actually grabbed him, Ron and I, cornered him, you know, in a meeting, after a meeting, and we, you know, explained the situation and wanted to get, you know, his take on it. And his take was, you know, I need affordable housing on the ground. And you know, at this point, it almost doesn't matter how much it costs. I mean, there's the reasonableness test that needs to be applied. But at some point, though, we still have this structural problem. There's just not enough affordable housing in this city, and we haven't caught up. I agree with you. The numbers are crazy, and I wish they didn't look the way they do. But it doesn't take away from the fact that we still need the housing. And so at a certain point, it'll you know, we ask that question each time we look at one of these deals. Does this make sense? Does this meet the smell test? Is this the right, you know, is this the right call? We feel like in this particular case it does. And again, we turn away an awful lot of deals. But the truth is we can't be exactly where we might, you know, if we were, you know, in charge, you know, there are some other places we might be. I mean, it's been extraordinary that Ron's been able to buy as many properties, or AAC's been able to buy as many properties as we've been able to, right along MOPAC. You know, and that's been a blessing to us. Because it's opened up a lot of opportunity at Lake Line, where we've been able to buy. This is, you know, it's challenging, and this market is different than many, but we feel like we're doing this prudently and safely, and we feel this is a sound investment for us to make that will benefit this community for many, many decades to come.
And something else Ron said, and bless his heart, I agree with him completely. But we can't keep the finger in the dike, you know, to keep all these other non-affordable houses. I mean, we couldn't buy up enough to even put a dent in it. And I don't want us to get in the position to be the only ones trying to hold Austin back. I don't know. There's just something. I'm not saying it right, but I do have a problem with the. I guess I'd have a less of a problem if we put Trump building on the front of it, but or rather,
Commissioner, are you basically, we don't want to be the same all end all for the affordable housing crisis in the city of Austin and buying everything.
That's a good way to put it. On the other hand, we've got the tools and we've got the money to do what we can do. And I appreciate that more. You know, I would vote pretty much against every one of these things. if it wasn't for the fact that we're providing something that we need.
And to answer your question two ways, I mean, as Mr. Gerber just stated, I mean, we turned down one that was way above our, even my expectations of price just this week. So you don't get to often see that we're not trying to be the end all. We're just trying to do a little bit of a piece. And I think where this fits really well with AAC is on Suzanne's side of the house, where we're building things to try to offset some of the acquisition piece. You know, that's why it's so important that we keep trying to do the building side of it, because most of those properties are serving a much more affordable, where many of those are at 100% of those units are serving below 60% AMIs. And I think I could make a very strong case for taking a property like this that's so pretty and serving zero Section 8 housing vouchers and has, you know, no first goal of affordability over income, while some of these units are maybe fall within that 80% AMI already, the objective of this property is not to serve the affordable community like we would. And so I think, you know, proof's in the pudding, just like we've done with the James on First and the Asher, and we take a market rent deal, and yes, it's expensive, but then we still, even at that price, we're still able to serve a tremendous amount of units. Think about, you know, half of 270 units, probably I would gather to say will be more in the 70% range of units serving probably people in that 60% market. So, you know, I guess if I was ever called out for asking how do we perception of it, I would say, but we took this property that would normally raise rents by $300 to $400 a month by someone else buying it, and we're gonna not only maintain those rents, we're probably gonna drop some of those rents and some of the floor plans. So, you know, it's a fine line. I get it. I don't think Mr. Gerber would allow me to buy everything anyway. He's very tough on. We go through a lot of deep dives into these projects that before they come to you. And so we're very selective and very careful. I will say that we're not in a bubble. I think all the experts, the economists, when you listen to the people like Charles Heimsath, you listen to when you see the amount of people moving here and the amount of companies coming here, I think prices are only going to go up. Now, with that being said, the litmus test that we always run is what would happen in the worst case scenario. And I think I've told you this before. I never look at the best case scenario. I look at the worst case scenario. What if, you know, what if we went to 75% occupancy? What if, you know, something terribly happened, like we had the great fallout in 2008, and then prior to that, the deregulation of apartments back in the late 80s? Can we make the deal work and hold on and make the property still successful? And I firmly believe that every one of our purchases can handle that. So that's about all we can do, and make sure that we have protections and we have cash and we have the availability of reserves, you know, in place to handle those worst case scenarios. But again, I just want to emphasize that, I mean, the last thing I'm going to do is bring you a deal to bring you a deal. It always has to make sense to what we do. But please understand, in this market, it's much better to get something like this where the capital improvement, the repairs are already the new amenities, everything new, versus buying something, you know, that's a little older. And we are looking at something that's a little older. And so that's a whole different type of a scenario that we talk about buying. I mean, we look at like our projects like Sterling Village. It was built in 84 and Sweetwater in 86. And you see some of the difficulties of keeping those upgraded versus buying something like this, where we can put the same amount of affordability in it, but offer those benefits and those amenities to the same type of people living in something that's built, you know, sub 1980. So,
well,
anyway.
you've done a good job explaining why we're doing what we're doing. But to go back to my original question, how big is too big?
So I think the board, Commissioner Bailey, I think the board made a decision on that in the strategic plan approval and said that we should revisit that question when we hit 12,500 units. And so I think the sense was that was, you know, a point where we should pause and look at that. We're now with this commitment, we will exceed 10,000 units, just by a smidge. And so, you know,
I think I said, why 12? Let's kick it up to 12.5. I'm okay with that. We're in the hottest market in the country. And at some point, even the grasping developers think that's too much. And so that's my question: when is it too much?
Keep in mind, Chuck, where we in or Commissioner in one of the things that and you know, we'll have a chance to visit on this down in you know at a later point. But where we are in the market is. Where sadly there's so much need. The market actually will serve more folks at 60% or 80% of median family income or 100%. But the folks that we're serving, which are really between 30 and 60, you know, folks who are voucher holders are largely at 30. You know, we're really providing a, you know, opportunity where none has existed. And it's been interesting with the winter storm, you know, we've seen folks who have who have really struggled with their properties afterwards, and we've heard from a number of advocates saying, you all didn't have those problems. Would you buy this property? Would you buy that property? Could you jump into And of course, we can't, but we won't buy it. You know, we can't buy every property. We shouldn't buy every property, and we don't want to buy every property. But I think it points to, at the level of that we're serving, there's an immense amount of need. There's an inability without government involvement, because we get the benefit of the tax exemption, because we get the benefit of doing a variety of putting in a variety of tools, and just the way we manage the properties, we're able to make these things. We've come up with a safe way to make a reasonable number of units work in our community and protect us over the long term. But we're definitely turning away lots. And I think you're right. We need to have an ongoing conversation about, you know, how much is too much? What's, how many is too many? And I would just, Bill and Wilson obviously know of our ongoing effort to make sure, you know, we want to make sure we're protected at every turn. If a deal goes south, we ever want to see that happen, and none ever has. But if it does, it only is within the confines of that one deal. It doesn't have a bearing on other things beyond that unique partnership because of the way these things have been structured. And so we're very conscientious about the protection of HACA, protection of AAHC, and protection of each of these partnerships and our role in those partnerships. As we work through them, but I hear what you're saying, and I think we always need to. I think you're asking important points about always asking about how much is too much, and wanting to make sure that we're doing the right and the safest types of investments. In this case, sir, we feel good about it. It's a big property. It was a tough sell for Ron and his team until I actually went down there to see it. As we just kind of worked through it. It's a real area of emerging opportunity, and I think it's one that we will see appreciate dramatically, and I think one that we will see we'll be very, very happy to have in our portfolio. And the great thing also is that it's not accepting vouchers today, and it will accept vouchers, once we're in the ownership structure, and that's a real opportunity for
people. That's kind of like me putting off, I can't afford it till I actually see a Maserati, and then maybe I could find something, like that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Well, we would suggest approval of resolution 183.
Well, Mr. Gerber, let me ask if there are any more questions, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Yes, I have two outrageous questions. Related to this property, so I'll use that one first. I'm again looking at the data regarding the property, and I noticed that on page 3, of the subject property, that there is a pet policy with this property and that they charge pet rentals of $10 per month for and the pet maximum. Have we ever charged rents for pets before on any property? And is this policy one that we are going to accept as a continuation policy?
No, ma'am. We don't charge a pet monthly pet fee. Again, without going into the due diligence, you know, I don't know if that's in lieu of a pet deposit, which we do require small pet deposits. Usually they're in the range of about $250. And that is necessary because, you know, we've walked in some pretty damaged units because of pets. We also, we try to be very pet friendly. This has got a beautiful dog park. It's got incredible, pet opportunities. But again, we typically, there's a ton of fees that are punitive to the residents. When we take over properties, and 99% of those fees are waived at their renewal of their lease. And quite often the residents are just ecstatic about, you know, a trash fee or a pet monthly pet fee or a service fee because they're cleaning your hallway or, you know, whatever it is. So we go through and assess that, and I can assure you that we waive about 95% to almost all of these fees unless they're necessary. And I think pet deposits are one of those that are necessary. But to charge a monthly fee on top of that is something that will go away.
Okay, thank you. The second outrageous question is, in all of the properties that we have acquired, either through construction or through just, you know, purchase with bonds and partners and tax credits, all of those properties have swimming pools. Is that correct? Are there any that do not have that we purchased recently?
We don't have a single portfolio property that does not have a swimming pool.
Except for those in East Austin that were public housing that are now.
That's correct.
That bothers me. And I don't know if anything can be done. Are there policies, laws that it would impact that? But I was just thinking last night, in fact, you know, swimming pools, East Austin has one that I know of that's right down the street from Eastview Campus and BTW, and that's the only one I'm aware of. And yet, west of I-35, every property that I know of has a swimming pool.
We have moved
so far as we have central air, we have washers and dryers in the units, and I'm just concerned about people of color not having swimming pools available to them. That was my outrageous question and comment at the same time.
Yeah, we share that concern. We've had a lot of discussion about that in the context of Chalmers and Rosewood, and we were hitting different issues about what we could afford in terms of long-term maintenance and sort of long-term operations and expenses, and and also, you know, just safety of the property, our ability to make it so that given that we're, especially in where we have folks, you know, really in more heavily urbanized areas, how do we ensure that just the residents of that property go into the, you know, use those facilities? And it's a challenge. It's something that, you know, weighs on us as well. But I hear what you're saying and.
But we're doing it for all the other properties, so we obviously have worked out procedures and policies.
Well, we've never built a pool. We've got, and there's, and you know, we've just taken the pools that we've had. So we haven't added a pool, you know, to it, to anything that I'm aware of. We have talked, I think, at Chalmers, aren't we putting in a splash pad? So we are putting in splash pads at Chalmers, which will be really nice.
Yeah, the Chalmers West. There will be a splash pad for the children and their parents to enjoy.
I'm sorry, a flash?
Splash pad?
Splash pad.
Yeah, the ones with the little, like, the little fountains that come out, and folks can get in, get wet, especially, you know, during the summer months, cool off.
And those will be supervised as well, I assume.
Yeah, right? They won't be.
Well, the parents, hopefully, will be supervising.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
I'm just raising it as an issue because I know it's going to come up, as Chuck was talking about, one of those perception issues.
Yeah, we there's big insurance implications and there's cost implications when we put in swimming pools. The splash pads don't have the same insurance ramifications, and I don't believe they have the same gating and supervising requirements that a pool does. And so we're going to try one out at Chalmers. So it's going to be a good test run for us there to see how that goes.
I mean, what about other housing authorities? Have any of them dealt with this as an issue?
In terms of building pools and such? Yeah, I mean, I think, certainly other housing authorities have, many have built pools, and, I think my experience with that has been that in talking to different folks, it's kind of a mixed bag. They're expensive, and there's a lot of maintenance and other costs associated with them, and the insurance is significant. And I think, but it's very, very hot here in the summer. It gives kids something to do. But they're very hard to manage and regulate. So I think we're trying to put a toe into it. In Ron's portfolio, it's a little different because most of those properties tend to be, have gates around them. There's more controlled access at the sites, and we would never put in a pool at one of Ron's properties. We've just taken the pools that they came with. So, we've never done anything to sort of add to or expand or anything like that at those properties. But
we budgeting for the maintenance of those pools, correct?
We do in Ron's, and of course, there's a higher level of rent being paid at those properties than are, say, at the public housing, at the former public housing properties, the RAD properties.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Gerber, if I might say something to sort of address Commissioner Hall's concern. HUD, our public housing was financed by HUD, and HUD didn't even allow air conditioning in their properties. So probably the thought of a swimming pool would certainly have been out of the question. And I think as we have done the conversions on our public housing to RAD, I don't know if there was any prohibition or if there was any thought, the answer is why our public housing doesn't have anything in the way of wet areas or pools is because HUD didn't allow it. They absolutely didn't allow it. And we're fortunate to be able to acquire properties under Austin Affordable that do have those amenities that I think are true amenities for our residents and our kids who live in Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Commissioner Carrington, I agree in general with what you're saying. I don't want to overstate it. I don't know that HUD would say we couldn't do it. I think HUD would look to us and say, How do you make the economics of this work, especially given the low rate of the RAD rents? And then you start getting to the viability of the transaction. But we've never had HUD or seen HUD explicitly say that we couldn't do it. And if this board was to say we want to try a pool, we could certainly look to that. We're gonna certainly finish Rosewood, but I think the next stop is Lakeside or Santa Rita or maybe Meadowbrook. Meadowbrook has a splash pad at a park right across the street. So I think we could certainly think about that as an option, and explore that just a little bit more. I agree that there's, pools have been sadly, also on the front lines of equity in American society. And, we don't want to foster that perception or separation. We do agree, and we're grateful when the city of Austin has worked to try to open up pools, particularly in historically underserved areas. And we've urged them to prioritize, the pools in East Austin, and in Central Austin, because we know those areas have been historically underserved. And we're really excited about the splash pad at Chalmers West to see what that can look like. I think we'll learn a lot from that. But if the board would like to, I think you guys would like us to maybe think about what that might look like. And, Ron, we've had some internal discussions over the years about pools, and Ron, Commissioner Duncan Hall has kind of made the same case that you've made, which is that, when you've got a pool right across the street from Chalmers at, one of those, nice condo complexes that, have gone in, we have a beautiful, apartment complex as well. Couldn't we do something there too? And, I think we opted not to because of uncertainties. And again, the concerns about the rents and the increased costs. But I think what I hear you all saying is let's look at it more closely, as we do redevelopments down the road. Is that fair?
And I think that conversion from public housing to RAD has changed that discussion of possibly putting in some kind of wet or pool area. And sounds like you all have had some discussions about that internally.
We have had those discussions, and we've come on the side of right now, opting not to. But it's something that we would love to consult further with the board on. I would suggest maybe we hold this topic and put a pin in this topic because there's not a pool to be built right now. But say that as we have the next set of discussions about the Austin Affordable portfolio and about the low-income housing portfolio and redevelopment going forward, let's see if we can factor in maybe trying our hand at building a pool, and seeing what that would look like. I'd be very open to it.
Yeah, I certainly was not expecting an answer to that issue today, but I'm very happy to hear that there has been some discussion of it and people are thinking about it. I would, even this splash pad or whatever sounds like a good alternative for the immediate future. And I would like us to just consider the possibilities, because that to me in Austin is an important amenity that I wouldn't think of at some other places.
Agreed.
Let me pitch in just real quickly. For those of us that were raised in the South during the 40s and the 50s, there weren't any swimming pools for people of color anywhere. As I recall, our big zoo, Forest Park, was open one day a year for black folks, and that's it. And, times have changed, and I agree with Tyra. It's time to look and see if there's not something we can't do.
Well, definitely reopen that discussion. We can definitely do that.
Chairman Ritchie?
I would just say that I'm glad the staff is looking at it. I would be one for supporting, acquiring properties with pools. I'm not sure I would want to support going back building in a pool because of the expense associated with it. And you know, if I had a house, that's one of the things I think about. The pool doesn't add to the resale value of the house. It didn't, I mean, it's great to have, but it doesn't do much for the value of the house. So I would, so I'll leave it to you all, that I do think we want to make sure that the amenities we have, on our properties, to the extent they can be somewhat consistent. I think that's really kind of the issue Tyra's trying to get to, making sure that all the amenities are somewhat consistent. Because if you've got a game room or a gym and one facility, you want to make sure folks can have access to it. But each property that is built a little differently, too, and has different amenities. But I think we want to try to be consistent in that. Also, going back to the initial comment that Chuck made, when I did see the $116 million, it did jump out at me. It did make me a little nervous. But I trust the staff that you all are doing your due diligence, that you all are protecting us, and that you all are doing the what I would can say doing the right thing politically in terms of touching base with different folks, making sure people don't get surprised. Because I'm like, Chuck, I think we're doing everything right, but the wrong reporter could do a story and basically put us on the defensive where we're having to explain everything. And again, when they got control of the pen, they get the right, they put in what facts they want to see in the article, and it's tough for us to get our story out. So I think we've got to, again, just, you know, I trust your political judgment, thinking through these issues, thinking how they look to the public. But I think it's good for Chuck and those of us on the board to always bring these issues to you as a reminder to keep thinking about these things as to how they look to the public. Because although we've got all the paper to say that we're covered, we don't have any liability if something goes bad, having to explain that to anybody means we're in a defensive posture, and we never want to be in that posture. So, again, I trust your judgment that you guys are doing the due diligence, you're looking at this, and you are making sure that we're that we can, that all the bases have been touched in advance with all the right folks before you bring this to the board for us to have a discussion on.
Yes, sir, we agree.
Are there any more questions or comments from staff?
I have a comment.
Mary?
I have a comment.
Yes.
Okay. I hope that doesn't offend anyone, but being a resident, I see a lot, and I would think, in my opinion, a splash pad over a pool any day. Children aren't always supervised by their parent.
So Commissioner Apostoli, you feel that a splash pad would be, you'd be concerned about a pool? How?
Yes, I would go for a splash pad over a pool anytime. The pool, I've lived in apartments, private apartments, private owned, and it's a huge upkeep, and you know, it's just a child drowned where I used to live, so it's just very scary to me.
That was one of the issues that came up when we were talking about it, was that splash pads tend to attract younger children, you know, and usually some caregiver or some group of caregivers nearby because of the age of the children. And older kids, teenagers, would likely, they come in and they, you know, fool around in it for a few minutes, but they leave because they get bored pretty quickly and look for the pool somewhere else. And that's the, whereas the pool would attract, you know, would attract older children who might not be supervised, who might stay for longer, and does pose a risk. Those are definitely some of the things we were thinking about. So I think that's a really important perspective, Commissioner. So I think we all those things, and of course the different apartment associations and others have, you know, there's lots of data, just as there is on pet policies and other things about you know, what is sort of best practice and what makes sense. And of course, I agree with, you know, Commissioner Bailey and Commissioner Duncan Hall about the equity piece as well. You know, we know that, you know, public pools in particular, I mean, it's just shameful how that has been, treated for people, you know, for people of color have been treated with regard to access to pools and other critical services, services that they can enjoy. So we, you know, we don't want to perpetuate that, by any stretch, but making our properties, you know, different or so different, or inaccessible. So again, I would say let's keep that conversation going. I this is a good guidance for staff as we think about the next redevelopment. You know, let's look at, you know, maybe we can do something, or maybe the other alternative is maybe Commissioner Duncan Hall, maybe the community benefit that we contribute to is maybe we're helping a, you know, helping the city with a pool that would benefit a broader group of folks that may be nearby. You know, I think about, you know, over by, you know, what's in Pan Am Park, and, you know, and maybe there's the opportunity to do more, build more there, to do, you know, as different parks get improved, maybe we can do more to help, but can reduce some of the risk of having it just on site by opening it up to others in a broader, you know, park or civic context. So lots to think about. And so I'd love to keep that conversation going if we can. But thank you all for giving us some guidance. I think that's helpful. And we'll keep that conversation going when we next brief you all on where we're headed with other developments.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for that discussion. Are there any more questions or comments from the commissioners or from staff? If not, then do I hear a motion to approve resolution 183, which is to facilitate the acquisition of IMT, which right now is called South Park Apartments, to cause AAHC's subsidiary Limited Liability Corporation to enter into acquisition and development financing and execute any and all documents necessary to consummate the transaction. Do I hear a motion?
I'd like to approve resolution 183.
Second.
And so it was a motion by Commissioner Ritchie. Second by Commissioner Apostolo. Chairman Ritchie, did you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I did. I did have a question, and it's, as Tara would say, it's a stupid question, but what does IMT stand for?
We don't know. Ron and I had that same, asked that
we
question
had that,
yesterday.
We had that question yesterday, and for the life of me, I can't figure it out what it is. It is their brand. They had the IMT at the Domain, and which they just recently sold, which we were bidding on and lost. But we haven't been able to quite figure that out yet.
So
maybe somebody's initial.
In all seriousness, though, I think, yeah, but I would just ask so we would know. I would hate for us to be embarrassed and find this something that it's something that we would not want to be a part of. You just never know. So anyway, I think I'm fine with going forward, but I would like for us to ask.
Yeah, there's a town named Intercourse. We probably wouldn't want that to be.
So Ron, you all will continue to pursue that, correct?
Yes.
All right, there's been a motion and a second. Is there any public comment from anyone from the public like to comment on the actions outlined in Resolution 183? Hearing none, let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, Resolution 0183 is approved. No other items to come before the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So at 1:42 on the 15th of April, we will close the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation meeting. And we'll move on now to Austin Affordable PSC. Meeting has been called to order. We have had a certification of the quorum. Is there any citizen communication related to the agenda for the Austin Affordable PSC.
I just have a quick question, Madam Commissioner. Do we need to take a motion to close the Austin Affordable and vote to close it?
Or yes, we probably do. Thank you, Mr. Kowal. Do I hear a motion that we approve that we close the meeting of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation?
I so move.
So moved.
Thank you. Got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you all. Okay.
I have a real quick comment.
Yes,
IMT stands for Information Management Technology.
Information.
Okay.
What?
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Sure.
So there was no citizen communication related to the Austin Affordable PSC. Consent item is to approve the minutes of March the 25th, 2001. Do I hear a motion? 2021.
So moved.
I think second. We had a who made the motion?
Carl.
Mr. Ritchie.
Carl, was there a second?
Yes.
Second.
Mary, all those in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. The one action item for the Austin Affordable PFC is Resolution 00086, which declares the PFC's intent to issue bonds to provide financing for multifamily rental development for persons of low and moderate income for pathways at Rosewood Court. And this will be Suzanne presenting. Ron is raising his hand over there, so I guess Ron is going to be presenting on this one also. Ron?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for disclosure, Suzanne is back-to-back-to-back pretty hefty calls on some pretty crazy stuff going on out there in the development world. So she's on and off on the calls, so just so you see her coming in and out. Thank you again. Resolution 86 basically is an inducement resolution to issue bonds so we can get into the queue and get in line for a number of options as we move forward. Obviously, bonds pair up with 4% credits. Again, you've seen this resolution on multiple deals that we've brought before you. Once we get this inducement resolution passed, we will then go ahead and place it into the queue for either a bond collapse or the lottery, I should say, in December to get us in line for for bonds in the new calendar year 2022, or we will also be looking at a three-year carry forward to even give us more flexibility. So by getting us in early, we can get ourselves placed properly and ensure that we're ready to go when the ability for us to access these bonds come to fruition. So again, this is to pair with our 4% tax credit application. It's just the initial inducement resolution, and then we'll take that forward and get us in line and get ready to go for the next steps coming after that. So that's basically what we're doing here. Is getting our application ready for a bond award.
Any questions for Ron on this tax credit application for Pathways at Rosewood? I think we have Wilson and Bill's on the line. I think if anyone has any questions of our bond counsel.
Bill and Sarah Scott are both on the line.
Any questions for bond counsel? If not, then do I hear a motion that we approve Resolution 00086, which authorizes the application to the Texas Bond Review Board for an allocation of private activity bonds and other actions related to this particular project. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Aye. So moved.
Thank you, Carl. Second by Mary. Would anyone from the public like to comment on this agenda item? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, then we will, if we have a motion, we will close the Austin Affordable PSC's agenda at 1:46 on the 15th of August, 15th of April. Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Mary?
Second.
Carl? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the Austin Affordable PSC is closed. We then go back to the agenda for the Austin for the Housing Authority, and Mr. Chairman, I'll turn that back over to you for item number six, I believe.
Six. So item number six is a presentation discussion and possible action on resolution number 2705, approval by the Board of Commissioners, authorizing the Housing Authority to take the following actions regarding the IMT South Park in Austin. Acquire the site of the development, lease the development site to the owner of the development, and such other action necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution. So we've all heard the explanation of this project. So at this time, I'll ask if anybody from the general public has any questions, comments they want to make at this time. Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to approve item number six.
I so move.
Motion by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Mr. Gerber, is there anything else that we need to, any other business to come before the board at this time? You're on mute.
Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman. No, those are the only those are the remaining action items. I did want to ask Barbara Chan, our CFO, to take just a moment to give the board just a very brief report on the things she's working on, just the top highlights since we did not do a audit and budget committee meeting this month. So with your indulgence, I'd ask Barbara, as part of the president's report, to go ahead and just give again the top three, Barbara, and very, very quickly.
Sure. Good afternoon, commissioners, and then the Mr. Gerber, and all the team, the E-team members. My name is Barbara Chen. I'm the new CFO. I just passed my 2 months mark. So, I want to thank the board approval for our fiscal year 2022's budget, the operating budget last month. And after the operating budget was approved, the finance team has been working on to upload all the each individual line data into our Elite systems. So all the budget has been uploaded successfully to the Elite system. So the agency, we can start to submit all into our fiscal year 2022's request to purchase for business purpose for all our operations. But in the meantime, the staff, we are also will continue to work on with all the departments about the remaining of the outstanding fiscal year 2021's invoice and bills. You know, that's the nature of finance accounting. The bill normally comes after the month is closed. So we are still working with all the department to close all the outstanding invoice and the bills for fiscal year 2021. I think the major action for my department, for the finance department, will be that the closing the fiscal year 2021's book to submit an audit to FDS to HUD, and also prepare all for the fiscal year 2021's audit. The staff are working on all the account reconciliations, to validate our data and to ensure that all the financial records, everything are recorded properly and accurate. Okay, so it's kind of we expect the whole team is going to work very busy now for the next couple months. Talking about the fiscal year 21's audit, Anne and I met with our auditor already last week to come up with work on their schedule, work on this year's now, audit schedules and the plans. The goal is that the plan is that we believe that we can make it and that to bring this year's audit and bring it presented to the board, hopefully in the September's meeting. And we are working very closely with the audit. So because of that, we are going to the auditor now. Already sent us an email actually this week. Give us the schedule. They are going to start their field work and the testing, the compliance testing, the single audit part, all those testing first on the week of May 24th. So we are So it's going to be very early. So normally takes about 2 weeks for them. That was good. That including to testing all the tenants' files, all our payments, all our tenants' rent charge, any of the payment receipts. All those, and the most is in the compliance testing. So that's the first step. Because due to the pandemic, so this testing pretty much will be done from the remotely. So they will just kind of submit the request. Then we will upload all the supporting documents, anything they need, upload to their portal. Remotely, electronic. So we have, I think we are very good. We are in very good shape because all the department, including finance and all our assistant housing, our SHCC, all the tenants file, we are kind of keep them save them in electronically. So that's going to be a huge help with that. So hopefully by doing about two weeks for them to do the testing, then they are going to review it. Then they will come back. Now the plan is that the next step is after their review. Probably sometimes in the end of June, they will start to do a on-site visit. It's going to be a hybrid or combination of the hybrid of some of the on-site, some in-person, some continue to do remotely. So the plan probably sometimes at the end of June, July, they will do the kind of the phase two that and to wrap up any of the pending item, outstanding item for the compliance, for the testing part, and then also start all the finance records. That's the plan for that's probably at the end of June and the beginning of July. Again, after this complete, they are going to wrap up the audit and prepare the preliminary draft audit report. Then for the month of in August, they are going to do their internal review. That's pretty much just with the audit, their firm, their team, their audit team to do the review their quality, the QC control, all those kind of things. So hopefully, based on the schedule we discussed with the audit, we think it's very feasible. It's feasible hopefully by the end of, August 20th, the end of August. So hopefully we should have that audit completed. Then they can really present the audit to the board in September's meeting. Then our board accept the audit, then after your acceptance, the board acceptance that we can submit the audit FDS to HUD after that. So that's pretty much what we have as the schedule, and we already went through this with the auditor and confirmed this is workable schedule, it's feasible. So we are the team. I already met with our finance team this on Tuesday on our weekly meeting to let everyone know. So everybody is on it now. So we are going to have very, very busy couple months.
Indeed. Barbara, is there anything else you want to highlight? So we're really excited that the audit's going to see the audit as you used to in September, October timeframe at the latest. So that's encouraging, and appreciate Barbara's diligence following that through. Barbara, is there any other quick issues you need to share with the board?
It's not a concern. It's just because that related to our AHC, that our portfolio continued to increase almost triple from 2-3 years ago. We are right now where we are. So that's going to be a huge, new testing, new review stuff. So because our program expanded so fast, that's just the nature of it. So we know that we have about 6,000 already in operation. We have another 4,000, about 4,000 in the under construction. So that's a huge, increase new program, new properties, new activities, and they are all different. It's not, they are all identical. They are all, every developer is different from, So that's going to be a more testing on that part. So that's probably that's probably the only thing they mentioned about that. That's it. Okay. So besides that, pretty much that's what we are, what my team, the finance team, that we are going to be focusing on, and we are going to work on it, and we hope that we can really bring the audit for your approval in September.
We're excited about that. That would be great. Thank you, Barbara. Commissioners, are there any questions for Barbara? Great. You'll hear more in depth from her in the next board meeting or two when we do the next audit and budget committee. And of course, she'll continue to keep in touch with Commissioner Bailey and with Commissioner Carrington in their respective roles as chair and vice chair of the audit and budget committee. I just want to highlight two other quick things to you. Commissioner Apostolo, I would note that Commissioner Bailey and Chairman Ritchie have left, so I think you are in the chair in your role as our second vice chair. So, Commissioner Apostolo, I would just want to advise the board that staff is working very hard on a variety of national initiatives. Through our work with NARO, we're very concerned about what the infrastructure bill could mean for our agency and for other public housing authorities across the country. We're also, looking at some substantial new resources that are coming into our agency, most likely for vouchers, and we're trying to get a firm handle on what that means. As Lisa shared last time, more vouchers are going to be being issued this year than we have in quite some time, and that might even include reopening the wait list, in the next year or so, as we work through the numbers of folks who are on the wait list. That's encouraging, more people house, but we are expecting more voucher resources, and we're working to get a clear handle on that. We'll brief you as appropriate. We're obviously also very focused on, as we start to open up, keeping our properties safe and making sure that residents, we're seeing a pretty dramatic decrease in the numbers of COVID cases at the properties. That's encouraging. We've got fairly few, and we want to keep it that way. So getting vaccinations done, getting staff vaccinated, is really critical for us to be able to, operate the way we would like to. So we're certainly very much pushing again the vaccination, which I mentioned at the very beginning of this discussion. Beyond that, I would just say that there's a lot of work going on at the Texas State Legislature. There's a group of folks largely from San Antonio who seem to just hate their housing authority. and they have offered, you know, a storm of lousy bills that that are intended to make a point. Sylvia was up with the legislature yesterday batting those back. They included such things as if there were to be another freeze and the electric grid were to go down, a housing authority is required to keep a generator on hand that can keep the electricity flowing at the exact same rate as it would have been had the power continued. So basically, you know, a housing authority would have to build a power plant in order to go and have the electric generation necessary and count that wouldn't go down in the same freeze or flood. So some really tremendously bad public policy suggestions. And Sylvia did a great job yesterday pointing out how stupid they really are. We have another bill that's up today in the legislature dealing with large pet breeds, and Michael Roth on Sylvia's team is up there highlighting why we don't need state regulation in the setting of a policy regarding pets, that we feel we have reasonable pet policies in place, and to, you know, be glad to work with our friends who work in animal rights, but wanted to also make sure that we look after resident rights as well. And these are all bills that are very narrowly targeting PHAs, and particularly the San Antonio Housing Authority. So we're all, most of the housing authorities around the state are working collectively to point out the bad public policy that's being advocated for by these bills. And I don't think they'll go anywhere, but they're taking up some time. Beyond that, I would maybe just offer to Sylvia to close us out. If there's, you know, she has been doing such yeoman's work at Rosewood Courts, keeping residents focused on trying to think about, you know, what the, you know, we've got the buildings, but we don't have the things that give them heart and soul. And so that's what we're working with the residents on through a variety of charrettes and sessions. And I know Commissioner Duncan Hall, you joined in on one, and I know Commissioner Apostolo was in on one the other day. But Sylvia, anything you'd want to share with the board on Rosewood or anything else?
Well, I think you summed it up well, Mr. Gerber. I was actually going to thank Commissioners Duncan Hall and Apostolo for joining this week's community workshop number one. I hope that it was enjoyable and informational, and we hope that you will be able to join us for the second and third in the series, and I would definitely love to see the rest of our commissioners join in as well. I'll be happy to share the next two dates for those workshops, and these are being done virtually, so you can do it in the comfort of your home on the computer. But to that end, in terms of our resident engagement at Rosewood, We know that sometimes doing it through a Zoom call can be a barrier for our families. And so what we are planning to do is have an in-person presence. And Tiffany Middleton from our tenant protection team had a fabulous idea of doing a block party style type of meetup with our residents, and probably do that in about 3 to 4 little mini groups, little mini clusters at the site. So that way it's not a large congregation of folks coming together. It's something that is manageable and can be done safely while still social distancing. And really just essentially having our residents just come out of their front doors and being able to join in as a little mini group. So we're going to be gathering feedback and input from our residents on what kind of amenities and programs they would like to see at the proposed green space, which would be the commemorative Emancipation Park space. It'll be about an acre in size, and also a visitor center that will be just adjacent to the green space. What would they like to see there in terms of programming? So we're very excited about the creative flowing and getting some additional ideas that will be floated by not only our residents, but from the broader community. we want this to be a true asset, not only to our Rosewood residents, but to the greater community. So just excited about that, and we'd love to have the board join us on those discussions as well. And that's all I have.
Thank you all for your time today. If there's any other questions, we'd be glad to respond. One last thing I would mention. Go ahead.
So next time, Mike, I hope that we can have this discussion on the mayors and the results of the homeless summit that ended, I think, yesterday. Maybe the staff could get together and give us some highlights from that, and also their thinking about the recommendations that have been made, et cetera.
Sure. In fact, Lisa and I just got off the phone. They actually finished they had the closing plenary, if you will, this morning from 8 to 10. And the biggest highlight, I think, that came out of it, Lisa, and correct me if I'm wrong, is they've set the goal over the next 3 years to try to house 3,000 homeless, unsheltered persons. That's kind of the big thing. And it's done through a combination of things that we're already doing, trying to grow, you know, the Community First Village. It's trying to expand the capacity of existing providers here in the city. And it's also trying to build new housing and build new housing and convert existing housing to serve homeless neighbors. And that would, some combination of that would need to use long-term operating subsidies, largely provided by the Housing Choice Voucher Program, which Lisa oversees. So we can't provide 3,000 vouchers, but we can provide, you know, likely 750 to 1,000 over some period of time. And Lisa is looking and doing a resource review now as to what that can look like. But our serious concerns are that if we go and we provide vouchers, voucher help, one of the big weaknesses that the city highlighted in the sessions and came out today loud and clear is we need more housing, but we also need more supportive services. So how do we link the two? Because the homeless person put in a unit somewhere, you know, we know doesn't work. They need mental health support. They need addiction support. They often need food support. They need, basic care, health care, and oftentimes advanced, you know, care for, you know, for chronic conditions that also come into play. So lots of different systems discussions that have to be sort of followed up on. I think that the general, and I'll maybe offer to Lisa if there's anything she'd want to say. Yeah, I think the general takeaway from today's summit, the report was, good start, go back and do more. Keep working. That's the take I got, and from what I'm hearing from different folks. Nothing groundbreaking, but nice start, good conversations. You got more to do. Lisa?
No, I think you summarized it well. I think you hit all the high points, and there's going to be what's smaller groups, like affinity groups is what they're called, that will continue to do the work and try to move the work forward. And they're still in the process of developing a, you know, community type of platform where the, you know, the results of the work, what's being done, so that, you know, the public can go and see where they at and meeting the goals. And they're still in the development phases of that. So we'll definitely keep you informed. I'm actively involved in the ongoing discussions, and we'll keep you updated with regards to that. But, and the other point just being, you know, right now with the American Rescue Plan, and there's just a lot of resources coming down the pipeline. So I think, you know, the time is now to sort of activate and do these things, because the money, there is some money coming, both for vouchers as well as support services. I think one of the concerns that was expressed, not really a concern, but just that folks need to really think about it, is they really, they identified they probably need about 200 individuals to help with support work with what Mike was just mentioning. But, you know, to be able to really train people up in the workforce and find them to be able to work in this area, there's a little, you know, the difficulty of doing that because it's a large number of people that's needed to really help with it and to move things forward. So to be able to find folks that are going to be able to work in this area is something that's going to be probably a little bit challenging. So, but we'll keep you updated. You're on mute.
Is there going to be the attempt to remove the temps and the temporary camps, or are they going to try to get the structure in place before that happens?
So that is one, that's a great point. So that is going to be one of their primary things they're going to start working on first, where they're going to actually go out to the encampments and try to work with them directly with support services and then find, you know, permanent housing for them to move into. So there is going to be a strategy around that and a team of people that will actually go to the encampments and then, you know, have wraparound services that includes, you know, counseling, mental health counseling and different things and resources to try to help folks move from the encampments into housing. So that is definitely going to be a strategy where they're really going to be working in that area too. And there is a affinity group basically focused on that whole topic specifically in terms of encampments and how to move people that are in the encampments into permanent housing.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was a tough series of discussions, and, you know, I think it probably, I think that the criticism that's been leveled at the city from the state and some of the legislative proposals that are going through the state, as well as, you know, what voters are being asked to consider here in Austin, which, you know, we don't take, don't have any opinions on. We support the, you know, the work of our council, but, I don't know that the actions that this group took, while well intentioned, will remedy what what will be the remedy that folks in the legislature will be seeking, or that the governor is seeking. So I think there's still a significant policy disagreement or approach disagreement that is in play. I also think there's a big disagreement in the community just here in Austin between what, you know, the city council wants and all of those members, what the county commissioner's court wants and those members, what the Chamber of Commerce, the Downtown Business Alliance, the social service providers, and others want. So it's a very complex negotiation. I think they're trying to, and I think that's the challenge, here. So, we did offer, I will tell you that we did offer, directly to the city that, the Housing Authority, if we're going to do more project basing, we want to get the project basing right. We want to make sure that we have the greatest impact. In doing so, we may want to use a consultant, a wonderful consultant named Mandy Chapman Semple. Ms. Semple did work extensively for Tori Gunsally and Mark Feely in Houston, where they really changed the ball in the trajectory of housing in Houston. But they did that over over the last 8-9 years. So much so that, in fact, Ms. Semple was in Mayor Denise Parker's office. They moved her into that office to kind of serve as the leader of that effort under Mayor Parker's authority. We have a different government structure here in Austin, so that might look different. But I think we do want to talk to and work with experts to make sure that we get the project basing of vouchers right. And I'm glad Lisa did a fantastic job on the project basing of two. Last month of that 125 vouchers. We're likely going to be asking the board to come for another 125 vouchers, you know, at the start of midsummer, to keep the ball rolling. But we we're going to add some additional rigor as things go on to try to make sure we're really having the greatest impact. And we know that we can build and provide operating subsidy, but if we don't have that supportive services piece, very little is going to get better. And so that's the hard part, which comes first, which capacity do you build up? And so we've got to wrap our heads around lots around that. And again, there's lots of complexity there.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you all. I wish you all a good day.
Yes.
Commissioner Apostolo, I think you as chair need to suggest a motion to adjourn.
Mary, hit *6 on your phone.
Okay, now can you hear me?
Yes,
we can. Okay. Well, then I would like to hear a motion for... All right, help me out here.
simply a motion to adjourn.
To adjourn. To adjourn this meeting today, April 15th, 2021.
I so move for adjournment.
Okay. Second, okay. The motion passes.
All in favor?
Yes, all in favor of approving the motion?
Yes.
So moved.
All in
favor. 19.
I can't hear
you. I think we've got agreement.
Okay.
I think that motion unanimously passes.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Yeah, take care. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Okay, thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.